Jesus Christ did not die on the cross on Friday and rise again from the dead on Sunday to make us Christians.
When you rolled the stone away, when you walked out of the grave, you were standing in the light of day, and everything changed. You said, "Do not be afraid." You were scarred to heal the pain. You defeated death and shame, and everything's changed. Everything's changed.
Well, there you are. Welcome to Redemption's Table. We've just heard Ellie Holcomb sing, "I Will Never Be the Same," off of her Red Sea Road album. I love this song. Been waiting for months to share Ellie's song here at the table. I'm grateful to her for allowing her music to be shared, and I encourage you to listen wherever you stream. Go find Ellie's other albums and songs and take it all in. You will be glad you did. Well, on Palm Sunday, I had the opportunity to speak on Judas. This past Sunday, I had the opportunity to speak on Thomas. Judas the traitor, Thomas the doubter. Judas and Thomas have negative labels that still stick. And I have a heart for both of these guys. Anytime you have to carry a label, anytime you have been pigeonholed by those of the faith, every time your name comes up in a sermon for the rest of eternity, my heart is probably going to carry an extra margin of grace for you. Kind of like the woman caught in adultery, the prodigal son, Judas the traitor, doubting Thomas. If you'd been present among the 12 disciples, and you were the very first person ever to exclaim, "It's Friday, but Sunday's coming," Judas would not have even heard it because he had already committed suicide. And Thomas would remain the lone exception to that saying, to that rule, on that first resurrection day. Friday came and went, Sunday came and went, And Thomas knew absolutely nothing about it. In John's Gospel, chapter 20, verse 19, it says, "The disciples were together with the doors locked for fear of the Jews." Jesus comes through the wall. He appears before them, and they believe. And it tells us that Thomas was not with the disciples when Jesus came on that first Sunday evening. He missed Jesus. He missed Easter. He missed the resurrection. I mean, he had front row seats. He had a VIP backstage pass, and he missed it. He was the only one of the 11 remaining disciples. And I just wonder where he could have been. He might have been thinking, you know, if we're playing hide-and-go-seek with the Jewish authorities, if they're on an Easter egg hunt and we're the Easter eggs, it's probably not a good idea for all of us to be hiding in the same place in the same basket. He also could have thought, it is especially not good for us to be hiding in the upper room where we had just come from Thursday night after the Passover meal, the night that Jesus was arrested. And if Thomas was slow in discovering the news that Jesus was alive, he could have also not yet discovered that Judas had killed himself. For all he knew, Judas could have still been helping the chief priest round up the rest of Jesus' gang. I somehow think, though, Thomas was not hiding from the temple police as much as he was grieving Jesus' death. I don't think he wanted to be around anybody else. That's the funny thing about grief and depression. When you're grieving, you want to talk to people, but you don't want to talk to people. You want to talk to people until you start talking to someone, and about 5 minutes into the conversation, you're ready to hang up the phone. When you're grieving and depressed, you don't even like your own company, much less a room full of guys in the same boat you're in. No matter what the proverb says, misery does not love company. I remember the day I missed one of the greatest hikes I could have ever had. Back in 2012, I was in a deep funk. I had a young minister friend named T.J. Joyner call me up, and he invited me to go on a hike into the Chesis Basin in Big Bend National Park. Now, I had been living in the Davis Mountains for 16 years at that time in Texas, and T.J. and I had gone hiking into Big Bend and Guadalupe National Parks dozens of times. And all that time, though, I had yet to run across the two most respected animals in the mountains, the black bear and the mountain lion. TJ invited me. I wasn't in the mood, so I told him no. Later that day, I get a call from TJ after his hike, and he tells me that he and his cousin, they saw both a black bear and a mountain lion on the same hike. I probably said, "I hate you." I felt worse than I felt when I didn't want to go. I missed a double blessing. So did Thomas. He missed out on that first Sunday evening. Thomas, you should have been there. The doors were locked. Jesus appeared out of nowhere, totally freaked us out until he spoke, "Peace be with you." And then we saw his hands and his side, and we were overjoyed. "Can you believe it?" To which Thomas replied, "Unless I see the nail marks in his hands and put my finger where the nails were and put my hand into his side, no, I can't believe it. I won't believe it." Literally, in the Greek language in which the New Testament is written, Thomas said, "I not never will believe it." You've supposedly had the luxury of witnessing the wounds yourself. Well, I would like the same courtesy. It's only fair. And I ask, was Thomas wrong? He's not settling for secondhand faith. He's not singing, "Give me that old-time religion. If it's good enough for Simon Peter, it's good enough for me." And yet for his disbelief, Christian antiquity has put a dunce's cap on his head and made him sit in the corner for having the audacity to want to see Jesus, to want to believe for himself. You may say, well, he should have been there. Perhaps. But what a person supposedly should do when grieving needs to be tempered with some grace. None of us have a right to impose our expectations on someone who has just experienced trauma. It's Friday, but Sunday's coming. It just may not have been the Sunday it could have been. It may not be the Sunday that you have in mind. May not even be on a Sunday. But in God's good timing, there will be some surprises and some redemption with your name on it. Better pull a Thomas than pull a Judas, because even Judas could have been there in that upper room. And he could have been accepted and forgiven by Jesus. But instead, he ended his opportunity much too soon by taking his own life. Sometime between Resurrection Sunday evening and the next Sunday evening, Thomas rejoined the other disciples in the upper room. It is now the 10th night since the crucifixion. It has been a full week since Jesus' last appearance. They don't know when they will see Jesus again. They don't know if they will see Jesus again. So once again, the doors are locked. We presume they're still hiding. Thomas is now locked inside with them, and poof, it says, Jesus came and stood among them, and he said, "Peace be with you." What if he still did that? What if Jesus suddenly appeared right beside you wherever you are right now? What if Jesus showed up right as you were about to drop your income taxes in the mailbox? What if Jesus sat down right as you were about to order the third margarita down at your favorite Mexican restaurant and said, "Peace be with you"? I mean, what if twice a year he just showed up? Would you ever get used to that? Probably not. And the truth is, he is still showing up. He just looks like the man or woman behind bars. He looks like the homeless one holding up a cardboard sign. He looks like the migrant family with a trailer full of kids and the flu. He looks like the sinner sitting next to you in church. Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." Jesus shows up in the same upper room. He walks through the same walls to suddenly appear. He surprises the same group, his disciples. It's the same day of the week, but he's primarily there to speak to one individual. Thomas. He says to him, "Put your finger here and see my hands. Reach your hand and put it into my side. Look and prod to your heart's content. You said, 'I not never will believe it.' To which I say, Thomas, stop becoming disbelieving." Thomas said to him, "My Lord and my God." This is not the response of a doubter. This is one of the greatest proclamations of faith in Jesus that has ever been exclaimed. This is the only reference in John's gospel of Jesus being called God. Thomas is the only person in all four gospels to call Jesus God. Thomas should be known as the great confessor, not doubting Thomas. Absolutely love what Jesus says next. If Thomas had been there on that first Resurrection Sunday evening, we would not have these wonderful words. If Thomas had not been so stubborn and obtuse, we would not have this resurrection beatitude. Thank God for the oddball. Thank God for the outlier. Thank God for the one who was serious enough about his faith to have doubts. After Thomas made that exclamation, Jesus told him, "Because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed." Blessed. The Greek word is makarios. It means, oh, the bliss of. Oh, the bliss of those who have not seen me and yet have believed. Oh, the completeness of those who don't fold their arms and demand seeing is believing. No. Oh, the completeness of those who trust completely in the risen Lord so strongly that believing for them becomes seeing. Oh, the completeness of having faith in all that rings true. Oh, the bliss of those who have not seen and yet believe. Do you realize who Jesus is talking about here? Blessed are those who don't have to see the wounds before they believe in his resurrection. This resurrection beatitude is all about us. It is about everyone who will believe the disciples' firsthand testimony passed down through the Gospels and through the generations and trust that Jesus is who he claims to be. The one who bore our sins on the cross, the one who took our punishment on himself, the one who offers us everlasting life beginning the moment we trust him and follow him. This is a bonus beatitude. This is in addition to the 8 Beatitudes Jesus taught at the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount. A bonus Beatitude and a resurrection Beatitude at that. On first glance, this seems like one of the easiest Beatitudes Jesus ever gave. I mean, there's no blessed are the poor in spirit, or blessed are the mourners, blessed are the meek, blessed are the hungry and thirsty, blessed are the merciful, blessed are the pure in heart, blessed are the peacemakers, blessed are the persecuted. None of that hard, difficult, circumstance kind of stuff. This one's easy peasy. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet believe. That's it. All we have to do is believe. Yes, I believe. Sounds good. And Easter Sunday is one of those days when even the scarcest of us come back around as if to say, "Hey, Jesus, I'm still on your side. We good? We good. I love your holidays, by the way. They're the best. Never seen you. I believe." Which brings us back around to the opening statement. Jesus Christ did not die on the cross on Friday and rise again from the dead on Sunday to make us Christians. Right after Thomas's testimony and after Jesus gave this beatitude, John writes, "Jesus did many other miraculous signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not recorded in this book, but these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name." The key word here in the Beatitude and in John's closing statement is the word believe. John uses the word believe 84 times in his gospel. But he never uses the word believe as a noun. He never uses belief like a system. It's always used as an action verb. It's never about head knowledge. It's about heart action. And heart action leads to hand action and feet action. And that totally transforms the word believe from the mind to the life. So every time you read the word believe in the Gospel of John, you have to add these words to the point of taking action. John 20 again. "But these are written that you may believe to the point of taking action that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing to the point of taking action, you may have life in his name." And the action Jesus requires of us is to follow him. Luke 9:23, Jesus says, "If you want to be my disciple, you must deny yourself, take up your cross daily, and follow me." Jesus Christ did not die on the cross on Good Friday and rise again from the dead on Resurrection Sunday to make us Christians. Jesus died on the cross on Friday and rolled away the stone on Sunday to make us disciples. According to the latest Pew Research, there are around 63% of Americans who self-identify as Christians. Now, it's harder to measure a person's actions, but the latest statistics put the number of Americans who are following Jesus at around 4%. Christians, those who say it, 63%. Disciples, those who live it because they are actively following Jesus with their lives, 4%. Deny yourself, take up your cross daily, follow Jesus. There's nothing easy about any of these three. I've been attempting to follow Jesus this way for almost the last 50 years, and I haven't perfected it yet. There's no way possible you and I can do any of these three without remaining in constant and close contact with Jesus every day. We will never become like him until we spend inordinate amounts of time with him until we know his voice, know his heart, obey his word, follow his example, trust him to live through us. 59% of American Christians don't know what they're missing by not surrendering to Jesus as Lord, by not following him any further than a church building. But oh, the bliss that awaits them if they do. Oh, the bliss of those who have not physically seen the wounds and yet have believed in Jesus to the point of taking action, denying themselves, taking up their own cross, and following him wherever he may lead them in their one surrendered lifetime. I hope that includes you. Until next time at Redemption's table.
Everything's changed.